This is the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show Series 7, Episode 13, Video Analysis. Coming up on this week's Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, we delve deep into the power of using video. With so much video available these days, it's easy to get it wrong. We give you some tips on how you can get it right and help the video improve your game rather than put you off. We also answer a couple of questions, one on helping cover the ball up so the batsman can't see what's coming, and helping a young batsman who has a problem with hitting front foot drives as hard as he can. All that and more coming up on this week's Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. Welcome to the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, your guide to better cricket. Hopefully for half an hour, or by the end of this half an hour, you'll feel in a better position to score more runs or take more wickets or help people score runs and take wickets. My name's David Hinchliffe. I look after things. And this week I am joined by the Director of Cricket Coaching at Millfield School. It's Mark Garraway. Hello, Garris.
How are you? Okay?
Yes, very good. Thank you very much. Outdoor training has begun. It's always a difficult thing this time of year, especially when you're in the far north. But yet we are away, up and running. Our overseas import has arrived. So, we are getting very excited about getting him used to playing cricket in 6 degrees.
I'm sure he's really excited about that as well.
Oh, well, it was very good when he told me I'm used to playing in conditions like this because I played on a tournament on an uncovered pitch, so I should be all right. I said, "What was the temperature like?" He said, "Oh, pretty cold, 18 degrees."
Yeah, that'll be as good as it gets this year, buddy.
So I handed him the jumper. I said, "Good luck," and left him to it. Something I wanted to talk about this week was video analysis. I have noticed, because we've been working a lot with pitch vision over the winter and into the pre-season period, a lot of the players at my club have been looking at videos. They've been using the pitch vision system, they've been using the pitch vision app, and they've been watching their videos. And one of the pieces of feedback I've been getting regularly from people is saying, "I've been looking at my videos and I've spotted a load of problems that I need to fix. Technical issues, things like that." So I was thinking, that's interesting, that's quite a new thing for me, and I was wondering how you used video analysis to help people, and is it a little bit more than showing people videos, allowing them to think how terrible they're playing, and then trying to motivate them to get to nets to correct all the errors that they've spotted?
Yeah, I mean, what you're going through there is a very familiar process with effectively guys that have had no experience previously at looking at themselves play. And the first thing that most players will do when they first see themselves play, or they get opportunity to watch themselves play, is they will go straight to the things that don't look right, the things that don't fit against their model of technical efficiency, and also don't necessarily feel the same as what they look like. And that's the way that all players will go. And I remember a very similar experience when we had match analysis software at Somerset. We were the first county to bring that in. Only internationals would normally have that in. And we ended up with a load of players basically picking holes in themselves every time they went to watch it. So when I took over running the first team, I put a set of criteria in about the way that we would use the match analysis in order to gather information to be able to pick out some things that we might be able to work on if we did get a window of development, which is very rare within the county game, but you do get the odd one. So we could actually manage their use of the video analysis. And I think you're getting to that point really with your guys up in Scotland.
Mm. It's very easy, of course, with pitch vision because it's all automatic. You know, you just bat and bowl as normal, and then you have your videos on your phone, you know, within a few hours. So it's all very quick, all very automatic. So it's very easy to fall into that. When you're doing video analysis away from pitch vision, Gareth, so you know you're running a camera as you would normally, how do you can kind of act as the buffer there, can't you? You can present the information to the player rather than going, "Here's your video of the last hour, off you go." So how do you do that? What process do you have there?
Well, all I ever say to myself really is when I'm working in that context, and you're often working off the off of an iPad, or you're working off the sort of monitoring screen on the camera that you've got, is that you pick the ball that you want to see and you go over it two or three times. So when you show the video to the person, then you're really sure about the way that you're going to manage the discussion that goes around it. So I won't show very much, but when I do show it, it will be because I'm looking to add value or add understanding to what they are then going to go around and do. And often that would be to inform a drill or inform an intervention that they can then go off to the side and work on before coming back into a next situation or whatever the case may be. So I am the buffer, I suppose. It's easier in that context to manage their expectation because you are effectively choosing the ball or choosing the technical point you're looking for, and your language will be organized before you have that conversation. Whereas in your context, obviously they're getting to see the footage all the time. And I think with a little bit of education on their behalf, the fact that, you know, any player in the world, if they first look at their footage on Pitch Vision, would actually see some things that they don't necessarily like. But the fact is that cricket isn't about perfection. You know, nobody's ever mastered perfection from a technical point of view, and it's about performance. And you know, every great player, I watched the IPL last night and there was some unbelievable cricket going on, but even AB de Villiers would look at his footage if he was doing it with a fine tooth comb and find the odd thing that he didn't necessarily like in there.
And what about those times when you might set the camera up, you know, you're feeding machine or something, so you might set the camera up and just let it run? Are there times when feedback can occur after the session? So rather than doing it during the session and you can do something instantly and go, okay, well, look at this. You can see why this is happening. Let's try this to make a change there. Or well done for doing that in the way that is working best for you. But after the session, you know, in a more sort of reflective time.
Yeah, and I think you can do it within the session, but in one of your windows as a reflection as well. So, for example, if you're working on a bowling machine with somebody, if I leave a camera running, he might have had a really good round or a really good start to a round, and that's when I'd go and pick the balls up and I'd say to him, right, have a look at this. Watch the first 10 balls. Maybe watch them through twice and just tell me the way that you managed that or what you did consistently. But I'd really, again, target my language in to focus him on a certain point rather than looking at it as just like we would if we were watching the television and it was somebody else playing. So they're being quite specific. So one of the things that I do is say, have a look at the way you manage yourself in between balls. And do you think there's any correlation to the way you do that to the success that you had at the start of your round? So I'd sort of guide him in that direction to where he was going to go whilst I'm picking the balls up, and get him to feedback to me on a real specific rather than just leaving it as have a look at that and see what you think. Because I think sometimes then they can start to create things because they're expecting, you're expecting them to feedback to you at the end, and they'll just go, right, okay, I need to come up with something here. So I'm quite specific because, you know, as a coach, we'll get a feel, won't we, for what's going on down there. And you're asking them to check and challenge what you thought you saw. So I'd give them something specific and then go and pick some balls up.
Yeah, you don't want it to become a test of their cricket technique knowledge, do you? You want it to be, you know, something where it's a point, an option to learn from. I think as well, when people are looking at their own videos, whether you are using Pitch Vision or whether, you know, you're setting a camera up while you're in the nets and you know, you just film yourself in the nets and then you pick the camera up at the end of your batting and go off and look at that at a later date. Having the discipline to pick out the good stuff as well as the bad stuff is a really important thing. And what I've done with a couple of players last year, especially the ones who were feeling like they had a lot of technical problems, was I was making short videos of the stuff that they were doing really well. You know, so when they bowled some good balls, I was putting those on and seeing the batsman beating the bat and all the rest of it. That's a very positive thing as well, to go, well, actually, within what I'm doing here, I have had success and I can have success in the future. And it becomes motivating and confidence building then, rather than saying, well, everything's completely gone to pot here. I need to build up my action from the ground up.
And that's exactly what 95% of my video work was with England, David, exactly that. So if somebody played well, somebody had a great bowling spell, or even if they just got to 20, but they reckon they got the 20 really well and they managed themselves brilliantly, then I would cut all that footage and then they've got it, because it's reaffirming all of the good things about their game. So I'd often put it to a little bit of music or whatever. And in those days, it was on their iPods, and, you know, it was before we had iPhones, but it was on their iPods and maybe on their BlackBerrys. I would send them that bit of footage and they'd save it to that. And when they were on planes or when they were in airports or whatever like that, they could be sticking their headphones onto their favourite tune, watch themselves do stuff. And the sort of subconscious messaging that goes in during the little bits of footage like that are absolutely outstanding.
Oh, yeah. There's nothing wrong with a bit showing off, you know, even if it's just to yourself. Pick out, you don't necessarily have to put it up on YouTube, do you? Even if you're just filming yourself or getting your mate to film you or whatever, pick out the stuff that you're doing well, watch it again, and feel good about yourself, because, you know, there'll be plenty of opportunities in cricket to feel bad about yourself. So you've got to take those ones where you get to feel good about yourself as well.
It's just indulging in your own self stuff, but in a real quiet space, isn't it? And you know, we talk about people visualizing and really people getting really good at visualizing positive stuff. But if you can reaffirm that and then make it real just by having that on your phone or whatever, particularly if it's to some really poignant music for you as well, I think that's a magnificent thing to do. And you know, I was with a bunch of kids last week, and they were creating their own videos of various different things, including their cricket play as well, and some of the stuff they were coming up with from a creativity perspective far outweighs anything I ever used to do with England. You know, the technology's there, it's available, and on iMovie and various other things, they were coming up with some incredible stuff.
Oh yeah, apps now, you know, on phones, you know, from compared to 10 years ago, you know, it's, you'd have to have a top of the range computer and 5 years worth of video editing experience, and now you can do it on a phone in about 20 minutes. So, you know, use those ways to become more creative and become more positive. And then when you are walking out to the middle, you're thinking to yourself, you're playing that song in your head and you're thinking, here we go again.
Definitely. Years ago, I mean, Ian Botham spoke to Hampshire team years ago. Liam was playing with us, so Ian came down and did a bit of a chat, and he said that he always used to have a song in his head which inspired him. And you know, I won't reveal what it was because it'll probably embarrass him about what it was, but he told us about that. And very much when I was training in particular, I had a song that was going on in my head. Now, of course, nowadays with the technology we've got available with us, we can have that song going everywhere with us. And you know, we're in an exciting age, but if you can link visuals of your top performances with a song, then it just, from the way our brains operate, it will trigger all sorts of very positive things that can reinforce all the coaching that's going on around you.
Okay, let's wrap up this section with the yes-no round. That's three questions that can only be answered yes or no, no matter how much more that you want to say. I've got the questions, so let's fire away. First question, most coaches are afraid of changing bowling actions.
No.
Second question, good medium-paced bowlers use guile as much as good spinners.
Yes.
Third question, it takes practice to stay focused.
Yes.
Right, let's do a couple of questions. They've been sent in by listeners to this show, maybe even by you, but whoever you are, some questions have been sent in and we're going to answer them. And then we're going to decide on the best question of the week, which will win a prize of an online coaching course from Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. Kunal sent in a question and he said, can I use a bowling type that enables me to cover the seam and the shiny side of the ball? Eventually, I think batsmen will see the ball when I'm bringing the bowling arm down. So what can I do? Please help. I guess he's thinking, you know, he wants to make sure that they don't know which way the ball's going to swing. He wants to cover it up. But at some point, they're going to be able to see the ball. So what's the strategy here?
Well, we've seen a number of people and a number of bowlers at different times of a game adopt a covering up methodology. So there were bowlers in the past, and I think back to the Holyoke brothers, who would both run in covering the ball, realizing that deception rather than express pace was very much part of their game. So they would run in every single ball with both hands on the ball, covering up as much as they could do in order to hide whatever was coming next from the batter. And they did it absolutely brilliant, both of them. Amazing. I can remember getting out to Ben slower ball years ago, and I think that might have been 1996. He bowled me a slower ball, and I smashed him everywhere. And then all of a sudden, he bowled me this thing, and I'm not joking you, I don't think I saw it from the moment that he let go of it, and I just instinctively sort of jabbed down with my bat, and the ball literally lobbed up off the shoulder of my bat and went to gully. So that's one method of it, you know. Fantastic bit of bowling, far too good for me, that was for sure. But yeah, magnificent. And we see people now like the Staines and the Andersons of this world, when the ball starts to reverse and when it starts to do some funny things, they will start to cover up, to try and deceive the batter and not give them an early cue. But I think the point is that it's really difficult, if not impossible, to completely hide the ball all the way through its journey until point of release. And there's a number of reasons for that. Sometimes we don't want that to happen because it will mean that our bowling circle is not being directed towards our direction that we're looking to bowl the ball into, and we don't want that to happen because obviously that's going to have a negative effect on our direction and also on our pace as well, because if we can't apply the force going direct towards target, then there's going to be a drop off in pace as a result of that. So I don't think it's particularly possible. There were bowlers that would run up conventionally and then you would lose their bowling arm behind them, and again, somebody like Devon Malcolm, who played for England, who was very difficult to play because the ball would go, as he took it backwards, it would go completely behind his body and then it would come round. Shoaib Akhtar was a bit like that. Facing him wasn't easy because you lost that ball for a time, but you also, when he ran in and bowled, you had a really good idea of which way it was going to swing, if nothing else. You didn't quite know where it was going to go, and you didn't know whether it was going to hit you in the head or hit you on the foot, but it was going to do one of those two things. So I think it's really difficult to hide the ball from a batter throughout the whole of its journey from the top of your run through to point of release. I think that's, you know, you're going to struggle to achieve that. To me, it's about skill. So if you run up covering the ball, which it sounds like you are at the moment, then it's about how do you execute those skills really well? Can you hit those lengths at pace that enable you to get the most out of the ball swinging or cutting or slower ball or whatever? And it's ultimately about being able to hit your spots whilst maintaining your top pace or your variation. And so I wouldn't get too caught up in the deception. I think you've got to back your ability to hit your spots and deliver that ball, because, you know, Shane Warne had a number of different deliveries, but he could land them. You could run up and bowl at me with loads of variation. That would be fantastic. But the Ian Harveys of this world could also land his Yorker, land his slower ball bumper, land his slower ball on length. You know, make sure you can do that. I wouldn't get caught too much in the deception if you can't execute. You've got to be able to do the execution, otherwise you're nowhere.
Yeah, exactly. And there's a lot that can happen, isn't there, you know, that is out of your control. Even if you very effectively cover the ball up, maybe the batsman is not the type to really look for the shiny side, you know. Maybe just plays it as he sees it, or maybe the ball... You've set it up for an outswing and the ball just doesn't swing, you know? So even if you've bowled the perfect, you know, away swinger or away swinger, in swinger, and then the in swinger just doesn't swing and it's a half volley, and you've, you know, the guy creams you through the covers and you think, oh, well, that was the perfect plan. Unfortunately, it didn't quite survive contact with the enemy.
No, exactly right. And you look at somebody like Stuart Broad. You know, Stuart Broad telegraphs virtually every ball he bowls, but he backs himself to be able to nail the yeah, skill, exactly. And to nail the area that he's trying to bowl. And you know, I'd take Stuart Broad's career over mine any day of the week. So, I think deception's great, but don't let it get in the way of skill.
Yeah, and if you can do it, it's all the better. You know, if something puts the batsman off, then that's going to be a helpful thing. And it doesn't matter what the reason is that it puts the bats. Even if the batsman's so busy thinking, what's he doing, that he stops watching the ball. You know, that might not be your plan, but it's been effective. It's got you a wicket or a dot or whatever it is you're aiming to do, purely by something which is completely out of your control. You know, you've tried something and it's worked. But it's like any skill, isn't it, really? If you get het up on anything to the point of letting it distract you from the key thing, which with bowling is putting the ball in the right place as often as possible and trying to get a wicket, then you are going to have problems. But if you use it as an extra tool, it's going to work for you.
Exactly right. And that's the way to look at it. You know, can you run up, bowl your top pace and hit all of those areas that you want with a bit of deception? Added bonus for me.
Yeah, exactly. And some people will be just naturally better at it than others. And those, you know, if you can do it, do it. If you struggle with it, maybe look for something else. You never know what you'll find if you start experimenting. Okay, let's move on to the next question from Ryan. And Ryan says, hey there, I'm currently struggling with hitting a cricket ball hard, especially in front foot shots. I can never hit a cover drive or a straight drive with any power or get any value for the shots. Presently, I'm lucky to get a single when playing these shots. I do struggle to get my weight over my front leg when driving. My weight's always back and not over my front leg when I play a cover or a straight drive. Could this be a reason why I struggle to hit the ball hard and can't get any runs off it? Just wondering if you could give me any drills, tips or techniques that could help me hit the ball harder and longer, and the drills to help me get my weight over my front leg when driving, if this is why I can't hit a cover drive hard. Thanks for your time. I feel like, especially with younger players, especially where the pitches are slower and the outfields are longer, that can be very frustrating, can't it, Gareth?
Very much so. I know exactly where you're coming from, Bud, on this, because it happens to so many people, and you know there can be so many different reasons. But we'll start from the start, I suppose, is that a lot of people will find it difficult to get their weight going back into the ball, which is what we're looking to happen here, and it sounds like isn't being achieved when you're playing off the front foot. And that can, if we go to the start, then the stance is really important, because it prepares us to be ready to be able to move. And it sounds to me as if you're not able to move the whole of your body, and it's possible, but it's only your foot that's moving. Now, we know that some people do lead with their foot when they step forward. However, they also have weight transfer going through the ball as they reach contact point and through contact. So it sounds to me as if two things could be happening here. First one is that your stance might be a little bit wide. So check the width of your stance. If that isn't it, then let's move to the next thing and let's get a camera from the side. Get somebody, a mate, to video maybe some bobble feeds with a tennis ball and see how you move, and see if your body moves with your foot. And if your body moves with your foot, then there's a good chance that you're going to be getting your weight going forward into the ball, and you're going to be transferring your weight from your back foot to your front. If it doesn't, and actually it forces the weight backwards, then you might want to have a start thinking about your shoulder leading and your head leading to start getting that weight to go forward rather than your foot. So stance first, is it too wide? Because often when it's too wide, people can't get their weight going forward. Secondly, are you a foot leader or are you a head leader? If you are presently a foot leader and that's stopping you from getting your weight forward, then have an experiment with leading with your head and shoulder in sort of a conventional coaching fashion, because that will help. And then lastly, have a look at where your contact point. And again, that side on video footage is a really good place to go on contact point. And have a look to see if you're playing the ball too early or maybe even too late, that you're not able to allow your hands to go through the ball effectively. So those could be the main reasons that you can pick up from the front. And then I suppose the final thing is to have a look at the swing of the bat. And there are a lot of people who start with a high backswing and then maybe bring it down and then have a little waggle and then try to hit the ball, which is obviously going to reduce their range of motion. For me, the best starting point for any batter is to do something like a Ricky Ponting, where he used to start with his hands around his belly button, just underneath his belly button, maybe on his belt line. And then as he stepped to the ball, his hands would go back. It's an action-reaction thing. As you step forward, your hands go back, and then they will come down in a nice fluent fashion. And most of the best players in the world do something along those lines. So again, you've got stance, you've got how do you move, and then you've got your backswing. And if you can break that down and have a look, and maybe even get somebody to send a video in and on your behalf from sideways on, then we can have a look at it. But for everybody else out there, stance, how do you move, have a look at your backswing, and then have a look at your contact point. If you can get those things working together, then you will definitely start hitting the ball a lot cleaner and more consistently.
It would also be interesting to know where he thinks he can take it to if he gets it right. Because often, if you see somebody absolutely nailing out of the middle in a, you know, in an international match, you think, okay, well, if I just make a couple of technical changes, I can hit it almost as hard as that, surely. And you know, you might be 11 years old, you know, playing against a bowler who's bowling a lot slower, and the pitch is a lot slower, and the outfield is a lot longer. And even if you do absolutely nail it, it's not going to go that far. So it'd be interesting to know what he considers to be a successful outcome from that as well. What sort of success, Gareth, have you had with drills like the no feet drill that Bob Wilmer encouraged, where you're getting someone to play a drive but without moving their feet?
It's a great drill, fantastic drill, and it's one that I've used a lot with players, but I wouldn't use it with every player necessarily.
Yeah.
But in this case, I would probably use it in order to eliminate a drill, or to work out whether that drill actually worked for this person. So generally, if you're a head and shoulder lead person, you will find this drill quite a good one. So basically, you stand with your feet still, the ball gets delivered either with a bobble feed, or once you've had a go at that and you've mastered that, then with a overarm throw, a throw down, and you just let the ball come to you. You lean with your head and your shoulder, and you time the ball without moving your feet. And then obviously the next stage for that is to let the feet flow after you've had a head and shoulder lead. So if this guy is somebody who leads from the top for his head and shoulder, I'd be really happy to persist with that. But I'd probably want to eliminate it if it wasn't working for him. I'd just want to eliminate it and say, right, we've got some other drills that we can work on. So there's one. Another Bob Wilmer drill was the one-legged drill. And this is something that we did with Michael Vaughan a lot.
I was going to ask about that. Yeah.
So, again, I'd kneel down at the front of a net and I'd bobble balls in to him. because I can't do underarm throw, so I have to do it like a dart player. And then he would drive the ball back, but it would take, it'd stand in a normal stance, but at the end of a shot and during the execution of a shot, he'd be doing it purely off of his front leg. Again, that helps to get that feeling of the weight being distributed from back foot to front foot. It actually is only over the front foot, and it's a good way of getting that weight going through the ball. So another fantastic drill, and I think I wrote an article, one of my first articles actually, for Pitch Vision, was based on that. So maybe we could link to that as well. But that was another Bob Wilmer drill. He was an absolute genius.
Yeah, in fact, I was looking at that article the other day. I was trying to think of ways to help players make the transition from playing on a faster variable bounce true indoor facility into outdoor pitches, which are going to be wet and slow, and the ball's going to be able to seam and swing around. So thinking, you know, what kind of drills can we get people, encourage them to be confident playing forward, because they're going to be playing forward more than they would indoors. And I was looking at that very article, Gareth. So if West of Scotland guys, you might be having a little go at that on Thursday.
The other one as well, which is to play bounce ball. And bounce ball works for virtually every player that I've ever had lucky enough to work for, where it's a Sachin Tendulkar drill. So there was one day I had the great pleasure of throwing some balls at Sach, and the drill that he wanted to do was to effectively make divots or make marks on the pitch that we were practicing on as close to him as possible. So he would be looking to hit the ball down into the ground. And by doing that, if he was hitting the ball hard, he would have to get his weight going through and his contacts would need to be late, which is what he was absolutely looking for in his game. He knew his game was about playing the ball late. So again, the divot or bounce drill is absolutely magnificent and helps you to get that body weight going from back foot to front. And then the last one I'll give you is to do, this is something an Ian Bell drill. So an Ian Bell drill was to stand with all of his weight on his back leg and then to transfer all of his weight to his front leg. So almost like we do when we walk, where we effectively walk by unweighting one leg and stepping forward with the next. It's exactly the same. So stand in a stance where you're up on your back leg, maybe go up onto the toes of your back leg, and then fall forward with possibly your head and your shoulder, or maybe with the middle part of your body, and end up with all your weight, just like we did with that Michael Vaughan Bob Woolmer drill, on your front leg. It's a really good one for developing that feel of transferring your weight from one foot to the other, which is exactly what we do when we're playing a front foot shot in a game situation.
That's a nice one, Gareth. So is there any kind of visual cue to that, or is it more of a feel for you put your weight on your back leg and then step forward? Or do you get to bend your leg extra, or do you go up on your toe or anything like that?
With Belly used to go up on his toe. But that was just because of the way that he wanted to do it. You know, right. For me, it's just about, can you build that feeling associated with transferring weight
from one foot
to the next. So, and then lastly, another really good drill, which came from, I can remember back on my level 2 course that I took with Tim Boone donkeys years ago, was getting somebody to stand in the in a normal stance position, no bat, and get them and throw balls to them at around sort of mid-shin height, and then they would step forward in a lunge and catch the ball. And again, that got them used to transferring their weight forward. So another really simple drill to have a go at. And, you know, it sounds to me as if all your weight's back. All of those drills that we've just talked about would be fantastic for getting you to feel what the sensation was like to get that weight coming forward. And then if you can get your contact point right, there's no doubt in my mind that your success rate and your experience playing off the front foot will increase.
Superb and comprehensive. Thank you, Gareth. Loads of drills there. I've linked to a few of those, the ones we've already got on Pitch Vision, and maybe some of the others will be appearing shortly. Keep your eyes peeled at pitchvision.com. A soapbox time on the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. That means 60 seconds uninterrupted. Mark Garraway on his soapbox, ready to go. Over to you, Gareth.
Well, this one really is a sad story, because it's come out recently that James Taylor, the England test player, ODI player, has been forced to retire as a result of finding out that he's got a heart condition, which is very similar to the one that Fabrice Muamba had, the football player, Bolton football player. And he's had to retire. And, you know, it just goes to show to me that this guy a few months ago, was standing at short leg, was taking some unbelievable catches for England and contributing significantly to a series win over in South Africa. And yesterday was lying on a bed and waiting for an internal pacemaker to be fitted into his heart. And he's got a completely different life ahead of him. And I think as we enter into a new season in the Northern Hemisphere, there'll be no doubt that people will get really grumpy about their form and their experience in cricket. But ultimately, you know, play every game as if it's going to be your last one, because you never know what's going to happen. And, you know, everybody, I really want you to go out there and think about James Taylor at this really tough time. I'm sure loads of people are going to support him. He's a cracking lad anyway. I know the ECB will be fantastic for him, and I should imagine I'll be seeing him on a level 3 coaching course within the next couple of years, and it'll be a pleasure to work with him there. But just play every game as if it's your last and enjoy it as much as you can.
And that is the end of the show for another week. You can get in touch with us, of course, and I'll tell you about that in a moment. But before we give you all those details, we need to do one more thing, which is decide on the winner of the competition this week. It's a online coaching course from Pitch Vision at pitchvision.com. Find out all the details there. And the two questions on offer are one from Kunal about hiding the ball when he's bowling, and one from Ryan about hitting a cricket ball harder off the front foot. Which one did you prefer this week, Gareth?
I'm going to go with Ryan's one this week, and particularly, as you said, Dave, if a younger player that's just starting off, maybe playing on some slow pitches, you know, some of those drills there's a number of them, are A, good fun. You can look a bit silly doing them, which is brilliant as well, but actually they have great outcomes. So hopefully for the younger player that might be struggling to transfer their weight and get any power to it, we've given them some solutions.
Yeah, fantastic. Congratulations. Now, as I mentioned before, Gareth, if somebody wanted to get in touch with us and have their chance to win the prize, certainly get their question answered, how could they send in their question to us in the first place?
They could give us a call on 0203 239 7543 or drop us an email on coach@pitchvision.com.
That's right. You can also send in questions or contact us via Facebook, facebook.com/pitchvisionacademy, or on the Twitter, we're at pitchvisionacad there. You can listen to the show every week if you want to as well. That's pretty easy to do. You just get your phone, open the podcast app, do a search for Pitch Vision Academy and tap on the subscribe button. It's totally free. And that'll get you every week the show delivered straight to you. If you want to get the show notes or stream the show online or get access to any of the other Pitch Vision articles that we have, that we're posting up regularly, then you can do that by going to pitchvision.com/academy and clicking on the podcast link, and you'll get all previous shows going right back to the beginning from there. I wouldn't necessarily recommend the first 200. We were just getting going, but now we're really in our stride. That's all for this week. We hope you listen next week. But until then, have a good week. Cheers, Gareth.
Cheers, fella.